The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
You know, it's been such a fun week. I almost hate to see it come to an end. I don't know about you guys, but let's get started right there, right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's Pat and Stu and Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. Glenn is, can we say where he is? Maybe not, huh?
Yeah. If we,
he's doing something with Operation, an underground rescue today, so he'll be back on Monday. But another terrible terror strike yesterday, this one in Barcelona, Spain, the same kind of thing. Is vehicles used as weapons killed 14 people. Just another mass carnage, bodies strewn all over the place. And, you know, it's just so senseless and so bizarre. And this seems to be their new thing, even over explosions.
Yeah, we're starting to probably hit that point in which the vehicle barriers at street festivals need to seriously be increased. I mean, because I think people, whether obviously there's a low risk of something like this happening at any particular festival you're at, but when they block these streets off, these are the targets a lot of times. You know, in a bizarre way, it's in a way kind of like the gun-free zone with the mass shootings. It's like you take out an area where there's any chance of traffic, and people just sort of, you know, they're all gathered in one place where they all think they're safe. And when they all think they're safe, that's when people come that are bad actors. That's obviously not an argument against street festivals, but it is an argument for security at them, I think.
Definitely. I just heard this morning that they're going to really ramp up security with vehicles in mind at the Texas State Fair next month. So they're already starting to do that. They're already taking that seriously.
And people won't show up if these things keep happening.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to stop.
The whole point, right, of this kind of attack. You just want people to change their lifestyle. You want them to live in fear. You want to create terror. And they're doing a pretty good job of that. So it would be, they interviewed quite a few people who were just on vacation.
Yeah, this wasn't necessarily even just a street festival. I mean, this was
this was the market, right?
Where everybody kind of gathers.
I think a lot of tourists.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so can you imagine? You're just going to Barcelona, Spain for a vacation.
Right.
You're having a holiday there. And then this kind of thing happens. It's just, I mean, certainly it's no worse than the locals being killed because they're both bad. But it's so senseless, and you just don't expect that.
You know, that's the point I just took from your comment, that you thought it was worse than
the foreigners being killed.
Americans were there on vacation.
It is funny how we treat these things. And the media, and like I was watching Fox News when this was going on, and they went to report. They're like, we have new information in that 4 NCAA basketball teams were playing in Spain at the time. All teams are okay. Okay, I don't know why that is relevant to the story. The fact that
it's the American angle, right?
It is, I guess. And I'm not blaming Fox for that. I mean, I guess it is sort of interesting, particularly if you are a fan of one of the teams that is playing in that general vicinity. But the idea that like three of the four teams have made a statement and all three teams have said the same thing, that nothing happened. Okay. I mean, there's probably something else in this story that you could cover at this particular moment. I'm just saying that it's possible that the basketball team, you know, being unharmed is not necessarily a story. Most people in the world were unharmed at that moment.
This does tend, because my wife and I have been considering, I mean, we've wanted to go to Europe our whole lives. And I want to go to London. I'd love to go to Barcelona. I'd love to go to Rome. Love to go to France. Yeah, even though the problem with France is the French. but I'd love to see it. I'd love to be there. I'd love to experience that. And now with all this stuff happening all the time, it causes you to kind of wonder if you really want to do that, doesn't it? I mean, this is going to hurt tourism.
It is. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, a lot of people dead, a lot of people injured. I mean, the footage that you described earlier, did you notice a line that was different from other attacks in which they really showed a lot of just dead bodies on the street? And they kept showing it over and over and over again. These were not people that were hurt. They were, I mean, motionless. No one's even tending to them. You know, it's not like when you have someone who's hurt and struggling, people rush over and try to help after one of these things. People were just walking by. I'm like, this is over. I mean, you know, a lot of people dead, a lot of gore, and they showed it for whatever reason, seemingly without hesitance in this particular case. A lot of times they will, you know, if you think of the clip in Charlottesville, right, where one person died, they went to somewhat great lengths to not show you the actual person who died, the actual real carnage of that. They showed it from a distance. They showed parts of it. But this was, like, I mean, really intense.
Yeah, we do need to see it. Up close and personal with all the carnage.
Maybe we do need to see it.
There's an argument there, and I think a strong one. I mean, I don't know what you do here, right? Like, they were talking about this. There was this terrorism expert on that I was watching, and they're like, well, there's nothing you can do to stop these incidents. There's really no way to stop them. And that's true about really everything, right? Like, there's nothing to stop someone walking up behind you with a water balloon full of red Kool-Aid and slapping it on the back of your head every time you walk down the street. The only reason that it doesn't happen is because no one's interested in doing it, right? Anyone can do it to you at any time. And that's the only way that this is going to eventually stop, hopefully, that eventually we get to a point in which people are not motivated by this thing. White supremacy, we've gone a long way in essentially eliminating. And it's a weird thing to say after Charlottesville. But, you know, it's pretty freaking notable when there's a Ku Klux Klan rally these days, just because, generally speaking, people in the United States aren't interested in it. Right. There's not a lot of people who want to be involved in that nonsense, so they're not, thankfully. Right now, Islamic extremism that's not the case. You know, there's a lot of people around the world who are really interested in it. And until that ideology is defeated, until that, you know, that strain of extremism is gone, and people just don't want to do it. Look, Nazism is like that. I mean, at one point, Nazism was, you know, the dominant viewpoint of a country, of multiple countries, when you throw fascism in there. And now, you know, there's a lot less interest in it, thankfully, around the globe, and we have a lot less Nazism. That's the only way you do this, right? I mean, and I don't know how you do it with a group like Islamic extremism, because it's so large. There's so many people that even if there's just an infinitesimal percentage of Islam that goes down this road, it's still almost impossible to stop.
Either stop it that way or by killing every single terrorist on the planet, which is difficult.
Really difficult.
Very difficult.
Well, I mean, look, that's how we approached Nazis, right? It wasn't like we were like, oh, you know what? Actually, we don't agree with your universal health care plans. And that's why they defeated Nazism. You did it with a bunch of bombs, which is, you know, look, that is certainly part of it. You know, but it's a lot harder here. When you talk about killing every terrorist, it's a lot difficult to figure out who those people are and how to do it. And, you know, we've seen, you know, attempts at that, certainly in certain countries. And so far, I mean, there have been parts of it that have worked and parts of it that haven't. So, I mean, right now ISIS is being pushed back and we may wind up seeing ISIS go away, that part of it. But we also, you know, you could argue that parts of Al-Qaeda have gone away and were replaced by ISIS, right? So, I mean, it's such a difficult task to do this in any efficient way, especially without, you know, without the support and really unified action of the world. With the Nazis, you had a lot of that.
And Islamic State has taken credit for this. The perpetrators of the Barcelona attack are soldiers of the Islamic State and carried out the operation in response to calls for targeting coalition states. I mean, is Spain really even heavily involved in the war on terror?
No, but with the open border campaigns in Europe, I mean, Spain, France, all of it, they're all, I mean, that immigration process for the extremists, you know, you said you don't know who they are. Nobody knows who they are. So they're just there in those countries.
But they don't seem to be targeting the Sunni militant groups in Syria, certainly. They're not in Iraq. They're not in Afghanistan. Why Spain? Why are they targeting Spain?
Spain hasn't had a big attack in a while. 2004, they had a big attack. Mm-hmm. But it's been a while. This is the worst one since the 2004 attack. I think that one
killed 191 people.
Yeah.
Right.
191.
Yeah.
Wounded 1,800.
Jeez.
It was a huge attack.
Huge. Europe in and of itself is just very vulnerable to these things. A lot of them have very lenient, to say the least, immigration policies. There's very little to push back. There's also very free immigration, relatively speaking, between the countries.
Yeah.
So even if you have a more restrictive policy on your border when it comes to immigrants from the Middle East or whatever, they could come into a neighboring country and then come across that border. So it becomes very difficult. It would be like trying to figure out immigration among the 50 states. If we were constantly on the border trying to stop certain people going from, Texas into Oklahoma, it would be really hard. It's a little bit of an exaggeration, but it's that type of arrangement. And, it's difficult.
It also looks like police have caught everybody but the driver, right? That's the last I heard, was that the driver fled on foot and the actual driver of the van has gotten away.
And it seems like
till this point,
it was a bigger plot, or there's an explosion they think was tied to this. There was another attack they think was tied to this through family members.
Yeah, apparently they thwarted another attack.
And they thwarted another one overnight, right?
Yeah.
Five people trying to attempt an attack, and they shot all five of them.
Yeah, in Cambrils, Spain. And they, again, you talked about showing the footage. That footage immediately was all of them dead on the sidewalk, showing where police had shot them.
Oh, wow.
Last night when they got them, they were, the suspects are dead. Police have shot them. And there they are.
Wow.
It was amazing.
All right. 888-727 Beck. More Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn coming up on the Glenn Beck program.
Simply Safe Home Security is a great security system. My sister-in-law just had a baby. They're moving into a new house. They're going to get Simply Safe Home Security. And it's a great way to do it. There's not all these wires that you have to put all over the house. You don't have to ruin your walls doing this. It is high level, high technology security system. And, you have a new kid in your house, you start thinking about these things. These are the times that this happens. Don't miss out on this great offer that Simply Safe has going on right now. It's $100 off their special summer package. It's everything you need to do. Keep your home safe from intruders. Simply Safe has around the clock monitoring, and this is one of the great things. I know Pat had a security system at one point where they upgraded. And when you say upgraded the fees by
they 100? Upgraded the cost.
Yeah. The same crappy service.
Same service.
Upgraded the cost by 120% or something like that?
It was a ton.
I
think it went from $30 a month to 52. So it wasn't quite.
52. But again, $52 a month is more than three times what Simply Safe costs. Simply Safe is just $15 a month, and there's no long-term contract. That's a big thing with these security systems. They'll lock you in for multiple years. Nothing to lock you in with Simply Safe. It's protection done right. Don't miss out. The offer ends September 3rd. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Simplysafebeck.com. You'll save $100 today. That's simplysafebeck.com to get your $100 off. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Want to see Glenn live? If you're coming to Texas, you can.
Yay!
Join us at Mercury Studios in Dallas for a taping of Glenn's TV show. To reserve a seat, email tickets at theblaze.com with your information. That's tickets at theblaze.com. Mercury.
If you owe back taxes to the IRS, you're not going to like hearing about their 92% conviction rate. That means the IRS wins 92% of tax avoider cases they prosecute. Maybe you skated by this long, but they are coming. You have to get out in front of your IRS problems before they show up at your home and your work, before they take your paycheck and bank accounts, and before they add you to their 92% conviction rate. Call Optima Tax Relief. They're the experts. They step between you and the IRS and start resolving the problems that keep you up at night. Just call. Ask how they've resolved over $500 million of tax debt for their clients. Ask about their A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And ask about the Fresh Start program with a chance to settle your back taxes for pennies on the dollar. These guys know what they're doing. You've seen the success stories. Give them a call. 800-706-3011. 800-706-3011. 800-706-3011. Optima Tax Relief.
888-727 back.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
The Pat and Stu today. Glenn's back on Monday. 888-727 back. 888-727-BECK. Donald Trump's tweet last night about pig's blood apparently turns out to be not exactly accurate.
that's a way to
not precise.
No,
in its language.
It's interesting the way
which is surprising with the president.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the media the way the media is handling it in that. Like, you know, he got hammered for not tweeting fast enough in calling it terrorism, essentially, in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, again, I heard somebody on CNN this morning, someone running for, I think, Senate in Virginia, who said it was not terrorism or would not admit it was terrorism until about halfway through the interview, which he eventually came around to say, yeah, okay, it was terrorism. Really? But he's the only person I've ever heard say that the Charlottesville attack was not terrorism. Who's denying this? This is like a typical left-wing complaint. Like, oh, well, if it was a Muslim, you would have called it terrorism. We're calling it terrorism anyway.
We have no problem calling it terrorism.
No, of course it was terrorism.
We didn't from the first moment we heard about it.
Yeah, as was, by the way, the Bernie Sanders campaign volunteer who went and tried to shoot everybody in the GOP at their baseball practice.
Right.
Also terrorism.
And then Bernie Sanders, after that, had the unmitigated gall.
Oh.
To blame the attack on Trump.
Yep.
When one of his own supporters actually tried to murder 1/10 of the GOP delegation.
I mean, that Sanders has balls.
That is some giblets.
There's some giblets there. But I mean, they're criticizing Trump over this. And I think part of it is the
general Pershing tweet, right?
Right. The first one was.
The first one, he was condemning the terror attack.
And the first one was totally fine.
Yeah. United States condemns the terror attack in Barcelona, Spain, and will do whatever is necessary. Be tough and strong. We love you.
Yeah. Great. Okay. And he did it right away. And again, like, the media's like, well, why did he react so fast to this one and not the last one? Well, I mean, if you wanted him to react fast, then he did react fast. It's harder to criticize him for previously not reacting fast.
He reacted fast, said the right thing.
Totally fine. Unfortunately, he followed it up.
Study what General Pershing of the United States did to terrorists when caught. There was no more radical Islamic terror for 35 years.
Right.
Stu.
Now,
and that was supposedly the legend is that General Pershing buried them in pig's blood.
No, he dipped the bullets in blood.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Then he shot, I think it was 50 of them. He shot 49 of them and let the last one go to tell everyone. And then there was no Islamic terror for 25 years, is what he said in the campaign. Now it's advanced now to 35 years of no Islamic terrorism.
Tweet, it'll be 135 years.
It may go that direction. So the story, I mean, a lot of people in the media are saying, like, oh, this is absolutely a lie. And, you know, it did not happen. There's no evidence of it happening. It's not a true story. As you point out, it's a legend. It's kind of...
Maybe you should study it, Stu.
I know.
Like the president said.
And I don't want to, again, quibble with Twitter and the wording of it, but if you're going to tell people to study something, you should probably know whether it's accurate.
You should probably have studied it yourself.
Yes. In fact...
Would be helpful.
That would probably be helpful.
That would be helpful.
Corey Lewandowski, who was, of course, his campaign manager, Trump's campaign manager, said his team knew at the time the story was a myth. When Trump told it in 2016, but decided to say it at rallies anyway, it's not about that, he told the Washington Post. Look, it's an analogy, which is okay. Like, I guess you could take that as an analogy if we should be tough on Islamic terrorism and we should maybe think the way they do and use that in a way to deter it. General Pershing's memoirs, and this, I think, is the genesis of this sort of legend that has been passed around over the years, talks about fighting Islamic extremists. And there's a related story in the memoir. It talks about how attacks were materially reduced in number by a practice the army had already adopted, one that Mohammedans held in abhorrence. The bodies were publicly buried in the same grave.
It's weird what we used to call Muslims.
Yeah, Mohammedans.
Yeah. Muslimites or Mohammedites and Mohammedans and all kinds of different things.
Right. So that's what Pershing used. He said the bodies were publicly buried in the same grave with a dead pig. It was not pleasant to have to take such measures, but the prospect of going to hell instead of heaven sometimes deterred the would-be assassins. So it certainly never, it did not wipe it out for 35 years. They did not dip them in blood. There was, his report was, and it doesn't even say he did it. He said the army was doing it generally, where they would occasionally, sometimes publicly, bury a dead Islamic extremist with a pig, and it would sometimes deter some assassins. So there is some germ of truth to the story. So it's not nothing.
That's a pretty big germ, though.
I think so, too. I mean,
that's almost like a full-fledged virus.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's pretty easily cured.
Wow.
It's not the story that Trump told.
That they did anything of the sort.
Of the sort is interesting. Because they did actually use it.
Yes, now, it is.
There's no indication that it did work as well as we'd all like to believe. Because the bottom line is, if we could kill terrorists with pig blood-dipped bullets and they would stop all attacks, we would be doing it. Right?
I don't know. Would we?
That's an interesting question to ponder.
Would we?
Yes, it is.
I don't know. That's pretty politically incorrect.
It is politically incorrect. But I mean, if it stopped, thousands and thousands
I'm
of people
sure
dead.
I'm not sure that makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly a lot of people who would argue the other side of it.
Yep.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It's Pat and Stu and Jeffy, 888-727-BECK. Glenn is back on Monday. He's out in Central America, as he tweeted this morning, somewhere in Central America with Operation Underground Rescue. So doing some really important things today, but he'll be back on Monday. And in the meantime, this Confederate monument thing continues to really boil. I mean, it's boiling right now. And I don't know if it simmers down. I don't know if this tapers off, because we've got a lot of fired up people about it. And the president, was his third speech on this. Was that Monday or Tuesday?
You're saying the press conference?
Yeah, the press conference.
I think it was, I can't remember. It was one of the two.
Anyway, he said this.
Many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So, this week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after?
Okay, that was probably, that was one of the things that got him the most criticism, because what a buffoon. He doesn't understand history at all. You can't conflate those Confederate generals with Washington and Jefferson. It wasn't their position in the military or or who they were fighting against that was the question. The question was, will you now want Washington's statue removed because he also owned slaves and Jefferson owned slaves? And so you're going to be coming after them as well? And they thought that was the most ridiculous thing of all time. And then it happened the next day.
And Washington Park is named after our first president. And a statue of him on a horse stands prominently here at this park for all to see. But one pastor, as you mentioned, said it is offensive because Washington owned slaves. Duke says they should not be held to such esteem and considered heroes when they participated in the slave trade. He says the changes could be as simple as naming the parks after African-American heroes like Harold Washington, Jesse Jackson, and Michael Jackson.
Wait, Michael Jackson.
I mean, the last part just makes it silly. Michael Jackson.
The guy was potentially a pedophile. By all indications.
Yes.
Yes, Jeffy. By all indications, he's at least a highly suspect individual when it comes to criminal activities.
He loved 12-year-old boy children. We know that.
So it was the next day.
Yeah.
This pastor is calling for, in Chicago, he's calling for the removal of the George Washington statue that was in the park and changing the name from Washington Park to, you know, Michael Jackson Park or whatever. So that was the next day. And then yesterday we had this CNN commentator, Angela Rye.
I think that we have to get to the heart of the problem here, and the heart of the problem is the way in which many of us were taught American history. American history is not all glorious, and even though I love John to death, I couldn't disagree more about George Washington. George Washington was a slave owner, and we need to call slave owners out for what they are. Whether we think they were protecting American freedom or not, he wasn't protecting my freedom. I wasn't someone who, my ancestors weren't deemed human beings to him. And so to me, I don't care if it's a George Washington statue or a Thomas Jefferson statue or a Robert E. Lee statue. They all need to come down. There is a way that we can recognize and appreciate. I'm going to finish my point. I'm not feeding into white supremacy. I'm calling out white supremacy for what it is.
Wow.
And sometimes what it is, John, are blind spots. Sometimes what it is not acknowledging that this country was built upon a very violent past that resulted in death and the raping and the killing of my ancestors. So I'm not going to allow us to say that it's okay for a Robert E. Lee, but not a George Washington. We need to call it what it is. And I'm not saying that they don't deserve to be taught about. We definitely need to learn about it so we don't repeat it, because we're very close to repeating it right now. But I'm not giving
any
deference
right
to George Washington or to Robert E. Lee.
Well, let me jump in.
Okay, so, I mean, Trump couldn't have been any more right.
I mean, he was totally right on that point.
He couldn't have been any more right than he is. It's already begun. It's already well underway.
It was one of those things that had begun long before this incident. This is not a new opinion she just came up with.
Right.
These are things that the left has been saying for a very long time, and we've covered them for years. I mean, and that's the thing here. First of all, one part of when you're in the middle of an argument like this, when you hear your opponent go down the, we need to tear the George Washington statues down, just back off and let them do it. Because let them continue to run their mouth.
Let them dig their own.
Exactly. You don't need to cut somebody off when they're in the middle of that one.
True.
Let them go. But it's this issue of whether Trump should have done that or not. And I think the issue here is leave that stuff to the talk show hosts. Leave that stuff to the analysts on CNN and the people who go on TV. Trump doesn't need to win those arguments like that. Those arguments have been going on for a long time, and Trump feels the need to jump into
it. He can't help himself with that, so he's going
to
do that.
If I was going to give advice to the president, which he does not care about at all, you know, he doesn't need to win those arguments. He doesn't need to fight every single point like that. And you know, he is absolutely right. And there is a moment, I think, for Trump to come in maybe a couple weeks later when they're talking about this and say, look, we need to be sure, though, that we're not destroying our history. We have to be sure. There is that point. But to be yelling at reporters in the lobby of Trump Tower a couple days after the incident, backing off the previous statement you just made, was not a great way to handle this, I think. And we'll see if it hurts him or not. I mean, I don't know how much it's going to affect him in the polls. Or whether that even matters. Separate from that, the idea that what he said, generally speaking, talking about history, that part of it, and talking about what the left will try to do with these incidents, both of those were true in that instance.
Completely accurate.
As we pointed out, he wasn't right about the Pershing thing, and he certainly wasn't right about saying there were a lot of fine people in that particular march. There weren't. There are a lot of fine people, by the way, who are opposed to taking the statues down. That is absolutely true. Let me give you an example as to how true that is. And it's true to the people who are complaining about it today. Because a lot of people on the left are saying, well, there's no good people who could possibly be on that side of the argument. Well, I mean, listen to this poll. This is from NPR. Do you think statues honoring the leaders of the Confederacy should remain as a historical symbol or be removed because they're offensive to some people? Now, you'd see, of course, Republicans are going to be on the side of keeping them up. You'd expect that. 86-6. They want to keep them up. Now, independents should be in the middle of this, right? Independents are the ones that they're not going to get the party stuff here. Independents support keeping the statues up. 61-27.
Wow.
It's not a close call. This is a blowout. Keep the statues up. And you might think, okay, well, Democrats, though, are really going to oppose it. No. They are split on the issue. 44% say keep the statues up. 47% say take them down because they're offensive. So the Democrats aren't, I mean, They're saying that people who are opposed to removing these statues are bad people. Well, let's be honest. You got half of Democrats who say keep them up. You've got two-thirds of independents and almost every Republican. So the issue here is not whether you're a racist if you think statues should remain up, because across the board, there's a lot of people. The overall, 62% of people overall say keep the statues up. And so this is not a particularly close argument. Most people say, look, we understand that there were bad things in our history. It's important to keep this up so we remember it. And as Jeffy said earlier in the break, if you walk by one of these statues and it's offensive to you, tell your kid why it's offensive. What a great teaching tool. And tell them, hey, this is offensive because this person did this, this, and this, and you should know about it. Mm-hmm. That's a really good way of handling it. And I can't believe I just complimented Jeffy's parenting style. That is, wow. I didn't
say I was going to do that.
Oh, okay, good.
Just said you should.
Okay.
I mean, we're on such a dangerous path here. To tearing down everything that is offensive to people, to silencing people, to saying that you can't, that hate speech is not protected by the First Amendment. I mean, we're on a really dangerous path right now toward losing our freedom. If we don't stop this madness, this snowball that's rolling down the hill, we're going to be sorry. And there's not going to be a constitution that stands. They're setting fire to it right now. But we're going to have to decide what to do with these Confederate monuments, because there's still more than 700 of them throughout the United States.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
700, including one in my hometown on the mean streets of Helena,
right.
Montana.
What
it's doing in Helena, Montana, I don't know.
Commemorating the Confederacy.
Yes, it is. But A, Montana wasn't a state at the time. B, it doesn't get any more north in the 48 contiguous states than Montana.
That's a very...
That's a northern state.
Is yes, it possible it was just a shipping error? Like they yeah, just like yeah. They gave it to FedEx and they just made
mistakes. We meant this for Alabama. I don't know
they
how.
They dropped it off and Bill said, you know what, just put it over there.
Yeah, yeah. Put it in the park. It's too heavy to ship it again. I don't want to box it up. Leave it over there.
I mean, how does that happen?
I don't know. This really is your hometown. Weird. Do you remember seeing it?
I don't.
Because that is a very, the map is odd, and of course, obviously, you know, 98% of, I mean, there's one in Iowa, is the next furthest north. Jeez. I mean, it's, there's not a lot, or maybe there's two in Iowa, and then below, outside of that, there's like one in Pennsylvania, but overall, they're all, you know, south, where people generally
where you expect them to be,
yes. And then there's just one up there in Helena. It's like, so, you know what? Right here.
It's so weird. And apparently, Helena's mayor was originally like, no, we're not going to remove that. But after Charlottesville, he's now saying, yeah, maybe it's time. So
that's weird. And we didn't, I don't think we mentioned this. Baltimore, just in the middle of the night, which is what they do in Baltimore, they remove NFL teams in the middle of the night and statues.
Right.
In the middle
exactly
of the
right.
Why not just removed all the statues? Like, yeah, we don't want them. And really, no debate. They didn't have any rallies, and they didn't have any protests, which I'm sure is what they were trying to avoid, but that's an interesting way of doing business. Yeah, no, they're gone. The thing that you saw yesterday, not there now, huh?
Not there.
Yeah, there you go. Bye-bye.
And there's quite a few places around the country where it's being considered that they're going to remove them. But there's hundreds and hundreds of them where they still exist and nobody's saying they shouldn't. But it will happen.
Oh, we've got a rally going on here in Dallas on Saturday, right? A big rally for the in downtown Dallas this weekend.
Are they rallying for it to keep it up, or rallying against it?
I think the rally is both. Yes, but the main focus of the rally, I believe, is to make it go away.
And you know,
good luck.
Right. Wow. It's not uncommon in these moments.
Right.
It's an interesting thing. It seems to be new. Like, I would have told you 10 years ago, there's no way places like, you know, South Carolina are going to take the Confederate flag off.
Right.
Remember, that was like, it was something that was so untouchable. In fact, it was, if I remember correctly, and this has been, a year or two since this happened, it was ingrained in their constitution that basically you couldn't do it. You know, I can't remember what the actual law mm-hmm. was, that you couldn't do it. And they just wound up doing it anyway because of the shooting. Which was a terrible, terrible incident. But it was mainly based on the fact that there was one photo with the shooter with the flag. Like, it wasn't like even right. that he came in there with the flag and said, I'm doing this for the flag or anything like that. There was one right. picture of him on Facebook with the flag. And because of that, they took the flag out of where it was.
That's where we are now.
Yeah.
That's
and then
where we are.
And then they changed the law.
Yeah.
Oh, you know
yeah.
what? We need to change the law, I guess.
Yeah, and it worked. I mean, you know, and it's amazing. You know, this goes back to every piece of, you know, progressive ideology as to how to move things around. And I'm not saying, like, I have no reverence for the Confederate flag myself. But the way you move these things is you don't let crises go to waste. There's a crisis. Mm-hmm. You have an advantage. You have an emotional moment where you can take a couple steps in the direction you want to go. You take it at that time.
888-727-BECK. More of the Glenn Beck Program with Pat and Stu coming up.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program, 888-727-BECK.
With all the anger going on the Confederate statues, it's amazing to see the New York Times and how they treated so much differently the Vladimir Lenin statue that was in New York City. Now, this really? Is, by the way, from late last year. A statue of Vladimir Lenin on the roof of a building. Over time, it became one of the more familiar pieces of art in the neighborhood, seen by some as a bit of kitsch and by others as a contextual nod to the days when communist meeting halls dotted the nearby blocks and May Day marches drew tens of thousands.
Yeah, were they saying that? Would they say that about a Confederate statue?
I doubt it.
No.
It's not a contextual nod, is
no.
it?
No.
Now, remember, this is a guy
who's...
A bit of
kitsch.
Yeah, right. This is a guy whose policies
wow.
led to the deaths of 20 million people in his own country. This is not a positive moment in history. And again, our enemy throughout a large portion of our history. Michael Rosen, the developer and one of the owners of the building, called Red Square, that's the name of the building, said last week that he learned that it could be sold to someone who might not want to keep the likeness of Lenin. So they were going to take it down. Goes on to say... that it appeared to have more fans than detractors. And among them was Joe Sims, a member of the Communist Party USA's national board, who said,
"Yeah, what a surprise.
At certain points in our history, communists were demonized. A lot of that is gone now."
Huh.
Oh, what a good development for our country. That's good to see.
Unbelievable. I mean, that's seriously unbelievable.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
All right, we've got, we still have some interesting chants that we have to get to because I want to see some of these turned into popular songs. Some of them are so good, they should be set to music and we should hear them on the radio every day, like five times a day. Also, the terrorist attack in Barcelona yesterday and a new one to tell you about in Finland. We'll start there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. He'll be back on Monday. Still some sketchy information on this. Several people have been stabbed in the city of Turku, Finland. Went on a stabbing spree and police shot him. They're not exactly saying that this is terrorism yet, but it has all the earmarks of another terrorist attack. But a gun was used to stop this guy.
So guns kill is what
guns
you're saying?
Kill.
You're saying guns kill.
Guns
oh my
kill.
Gosh.
They're created for one purpose too, and that's to kill.
That is probably because you do think we're going to go down the road of cars being banned. If this keeps happening with the attack at Barcelona...
Doesn't there at least have to be a three-day waiting period?
You'd think maybe the answer to that is yes.
Yes.
Especially for rentals. I mean, because these vans a lot of times are rented, and they're going to go down that road. And it's funny because it, of course, works with the idea. You know, this goes back to Al Gore's book in the 90s, right? They've been wanting to get rid of cars for a long time, or at least make massive changes into it. This might be another step on that road. It's because, I mean, it is the same logic, right? I mean,
yes,
it really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you were going, certainly, of course, we all know that cars kill way more people than guns anyway, regardless of terrorist attacks. But then in addition to that, they're being utilized in that way. Anyone can get them. They can mow down a lot of people at once. They will probably start making these arguments. We you know, Trump, we just covered this last hour, if you missed it. Trump made the point in his press conference the other day that they're going to start coming after George Washington and Thomas Jefferson statues.
It's already begun.
So we have already two commentators, right, on TV saying, yes, we should go after them. And not to mention the woman in the Vice special that we played the other day,
right,
who said, you know, they're always looking down on us. It's the master of Monticello looking down on us. So we've seen this already multiple times since he made the statement.
Jeez.
And of course, it had been going on long before that. Look at what was gone on with David Barton over the years, where he's been attacked for saying things positive about the actual founding fathers of the United States.
That guy bugs me when he does that.
Yeah, you don't like that. Well, you don't like it because he's wearing the flag shirt at the same time. And that's, it doesn't seem like we have any truth out there anymore. It's so hard to find it.
It sure is. You know what else is coming, too? I was thinking about this, what they're going to, a good way for them to go to the cashless society. Just as an aside, the slave owner racist on the money.
Oh.
Take the money away.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for that to come.
They've been trying to do that for a long time, too.
Yes, they have.
If you take down statues of George Washington, you have to take his likeness off of the bill, right?
You sure do.
You'd have to.
So listen, if people want to get rid of their racist bills, I mean, they can send them to me. I'll dispose of them properly. I'm happy to do that.
Wow. Wow. That's quite an offer.
Jeffy,
that was really magnanimous.
And you'll be happy to donate them to underprivileged strippers all around America.
I'll dispose of them properly.
it's a scary time because, you know, there's a lot. The fact that we're having Nazi rallies in this country is amazing that still exists. I mean, I think in a country of 320 million people, it's going to be really freaking hard to eliminate every group of morons that wants to gather with tiki torches. It's going to be very difficult to do that. And these rallies have been going on forever, and they probably will never completely stop.
I will say I was surprised by two things with that Nazi rally in Charlottesville. One was the sheer number of them.
Yes. It was a lot. The size was large.
Way more than I thought would gather and march with Nazis. And the other thing was just how vitriolic and unashamed about their vitriol and their hatred they are. These guys, they will just say it. I mean, we had that one guy who was trying to make it okay that the girl got run over and killed.
That was in the Vice report, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there are racists who will come to you and look at you right in the camera and tell you how racist they are. They'll tell you, I mean, Richard Spencer, all the way to the guy who we saw in the Vice video, who was saying all sorts of crazy things, like Jared Kushner should not be able to be married to Ivanka Trump because he's one of those Jews. Okay?
Right.
I mean, they will
so
go that far.
Unbelievable.
But and it's funny because that is the reason why the racist accusation is effective and why so many people fight it off. People on the right get accused of racism all the time. If we were racists, why wouldn't we oppose it? There are people who are racist, and when they are, they will be more than happy to tell you about it. And
listen to some of these guys.
Sure.
Listen to this.
I'm here to spread ideas, talk, in the hopes that somebody more capable will come along and do that. Somebody like Donald Trump, who does not give his daughter to a Jew.
So Donald Trump, but like more racist.
A lot more racist than Donald Trump. I don't think that you could feel about race the way I do and watch that Kushner bastard walk around with that beautiful girl. Okay.
I can't get my head around that at all.
Incredible.
I don't understand.
And by the way, comments like that is what got him kicked off of OK Cupid.
He had an account.
Is that the same guy?
Yeah, that guy.
He
had an OKCupid account. Trying to get some dates.
I didn't know it was the same guy.
White supremacists need love too, apparently. And,
OKCupid
was like,
what a catch he clearly is.
Well, he's kind of famous.
Well, he's on the market, girls.
You know?
He's on the market.
He's actually been kind of a media guy for a while. He was in an old Colbert Report episode. Where he was fighting the local government in Keene, New Hampshire about parking tickets. And at the time, he was just yelling at meter maids as they'd go around because he thought it was wrong for the government to take people's money for parking in the wrong spots. So he was harassing them and got like some of them to quit. And he was, you know, saying that he was all about freedom. I mean, it's a weird story. This
and
guy's got a.
Then he gets kicked off OKCupid. This is turns ugly.
This guy is an amazing documentary waiting to happen. But again, like we listen to this, any person in this audience listens to that guy talk and feels absolutely no connection to him whatsoever.
Total revulsion. Right.
And the reason why these attacks, when people just throw racism around, are effective is because no one actually wants to be racist. Even the people you think are racist, if you're on the left, you think, oh, well, that person doesn't support affirmative action in college where African-American students should get an advantage over a white student with the same grades. Well, that's wrong. They're racist. They want lower taxes for the rich. That's racist. No, it's not. It's got no connection to racism. That's racism. That's anti-Semitism right there, what you just heard. Yeah. And there's a lot of it.
And the guy who tried to justify the killer running over people.
But the car that struck a protester, that's unprovoked.
That's not true, and you know that it's not true. You've seen the video. So.
I've seen a video. I don't know much about it.
I understand
can
that
you describe what the video appears to show?
Okay, so the video appears to show someone striking that vehicle. When these animals attacked him again, and he saw no way to get away from them except to hit the gas. And sadly, because our rivals are a bunch of stupid animals who don't pay attention, they couldn't just get out of the way of his car.
It's their fault for not getting out of the way.
And some people got hurt, and that's unfortunate.
So you think it was justified?
I think it was more than justified. I can't believe the amount of restraint that our people showed out there, I think, was astounding.
What? Again, you know, not everybody ran people over, but still, I mean, it's hard to make that argument at that point.
I think it's astounding.
Yeah, I like his voice, too.
Astounding.
That Kushner bastard with that beautiful girl. He's a Jew.
Really, really strange.
Very strange. I will say this, too. That is a hell of a piece of journalism right there. Vice, that if you have not seen that special.
She did a really good job in that.
It's absolutely one of the most amazing pieces of news programming I've ever seen. And it has parts, by the way, that are critical of the kind of consensus left-wing media viewpoint right now. I mean, that you know, the part about we need to bring down the master of Monticello is in that as well. And there's parts in there about, I mean, this guy obviously does not think Trump is racist enough, which is not what the media wants you to believe either. But that the way she handled that question, he says, well, you've seen the video. Obviously, you know that it was justified.
And then she lets him continue to hang himself by asking him to describe
She doesn't say it. That's not what the video shows.
Right.
She says, I didn't really see the video. I don't know what it shows. What do you think it showed?
It's really great.
That is in that moment.
Really good.
By the way, she's sitting in a hotel room with this nutcase and about 20 guns as well that are laying out on the bed. And she doesn't antagonize. She doesn't necessarily try to push back and make every point she could make.
She's there for
she
the
just
story.
Lets him hang himself verbally.
And
that
does.
That's
and
a really good way of handling it. I mean, I can't say enough about that thing. Some of the stuff Vice does, I don't particularly like. I don't like every piece that they do. But man, that is absolute award-winning stuff, that clip.
Yeah, but the problem is now, and one of the problems, I mean, there's a lot. We've got a lot of problems right now. But one of the problems is that the right is being equated with this alt-right thing.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that coming up in just a second. Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
If you owe back taxes to the IRS, you're not going to like hearing about their 92% conviction rate. That means the IRS wins 92% of tax avoider cases they prosecute. Maybe you skated by this long, but they are coming. You have to get out in front of your IRS problems before they show up at your home and your work. before they take your paycheck and bank accounts and before they add you to their 92% conviction rate. Call Optima Tax Relief. They're the experts. They step between you and the IRS and start resolving the problems that keep you up at night. Just call. Ask how they've resolved over $500 million of tax debt for their clients. Ask about their A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And ask about the Fresh Start program with a chance to settle your back taxes for pennies on the dollar. These guys know what they're doing. You've seen the success stories. Give them a call. 800-706-3011. 800-706-3011. 800-706-3011. Optima Tax Relief.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program, 888-727-BECK. Some interesting considerations as we eliminate anything that offends anybody from our society. The name New York.
Yeah.
York, there was an actual person, the Duke of York, that was named after.
Yeah. Daily Caller has a story about how James Stewart, then Duke of York, is the person that New York is named after. And he was a horrific slave trader, transported between 90,000 and 100,000 African slaves to the American colonies in the 1600s. Now, that's...
name can't stand.
So what should we rename? Like New Fancy Town? New
Happy Land?
New Happyville?
New Happy Land?
Might be a way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we should name New York, but it certainly shouldn't be named that.
The Pit of Despair. You could call it that pretty accurately.
It is kind of in an armpit position there on the coast.
Uh-huh, sort of.
You could kind of go with that. You can go down this, and this is the point I think the president was trying to make, as we mentioned earlier. It's an accurate point. The slippery slope thing is real in circumstances like this, because you can go back to history and find even the abolitionists of the 1700s were white supremacists by today's view. You know, there's a lot of that that went on. There was never even a lot of them who were fighting for the abolition of slavery also were making arguments. Now, obviously, they're not equal, but they should have some freedoms. Like that was kind of like the moment of the day. But, I mean, you got to judge these things in historical context. But that was kind of what they were saying back then.
Yeah, some people were. A lot of people who didn't know them, you know.
Yeah.
They had limited involvement with them. They didn't understand. The slaves certainly weren't being educated. So they didn't know a lot about them.
And again, look at this in context. The founding fathers took a world that was filled with slavery and racism and continued it, some of them, for some time. But gave built-in structures that would eventually lead to its end. And there were great abolitionists. Ben Franklin is one of my favorites, who fought against it viscerally, against the entire grain of society. Woodrow Wilson did the exact opposite. We were going the correct direction in making people more equal. And he brought back the KKK out of the doldrums and brought them back to prominence in his presidency. Mm-hmm. For that, he is awarded a top 10 president of all time by the left in academia. And he has his name on every kid's school in the country. It seems like Woodrow Wilson Elementary School is as popular or more popular than some of the greatest presidents of all time. And he is awarded and admired. Some idiot leftist tweeted the other day, it didn't take FDR 3 days to respond to Nazis. That's because he was a real president. It took him thousands of days to respond to Nazis.
Yes, it did.
He didn't respond fast to Nazis at all. It's pretty well known that he took a really long time to respond to Nazis.
Who tweeted that?
Oh, some moron.
I mean, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't remember who it was, but it's some leftist.
Unbelievable.
But I mean, what a horrible point. And they look at FDR, and FDR is consistently named number one, number two, number three, greatest presidents of all time. His response to the Nazis and that war of that time was to imprison, essentially, and put in camps German-Americans and Asian-Americans. Not even just Japanese-Americans, Asian-Americans generally. This was, and this is a praised activity. So none of this makes sense. And we get to this point where we just fall into these arguments that feel good at the moment. You know what? I have no love for the Confederacy. They were the enemies of this country. They were, if you want to find a very strict definition of traitors, they left the country and got into a war with it. It was not about states' rights. It was about slavery, largely. They implemented it into the Confederate Constitution, and they required everyone in the Constitution, everyone in the Confederacy, and anyone who would ever come into the Confederacy to make sure that slavery was institutionalized. There was no option for a state to say no, meaning making the states' rights argument ridiculous.
In fact, I read this a couple of days ago, and I think the words "in perpetuity" are in the Constitution, and as it applies to slavery, they wanted it to continue forever.
Forever.
Had it been up to the South, to the Confederacy, it would have continued forever.
Yeah. And you know, this is not an argument to say the Confederacy was good or right or something that we want to lionize. But not every statue is about lionizing. You know, maybe at the time it was, but, you know, it's important, I think, that we look at this as history. And when we start just removing things from history with today's lens, just if you even go back to the wording of what people use, the words today are different than what they used in history. And you can find people saying all sorts of terrible things with words that we're not comfortable using today. And you're going to wind up throwing out every historical figure.
You know, the Stone Mountain thing. I think you have a legitimate point with that being started by the KKK to carve those figures into that mountain of Lee and Stonewall Jackson and I forget the other person who's carved into the mountain, but Jefferson Davis, right, the president of the Confederacy. So started by the KKK, I mean, that one's tough to get around.
But I mean, guys, they left Auschwitz up. I mean,
yeah, they did.
We go, and what do we do with it? We go there and we have the most profound moments potentially in our entire lives learning about the horrors of that place. And that stands, and it stands for a reason. If these things are wrong, you know, that is a great teaching tool. Did you see this, the column by Ray, I think it was Ray Allen, former Celtics, Bucks shooting guard, who went to Auschwitz and talked about it, the profound feeling he felt going there and learning about that and being in those moments. You've heard Glenn talk about it on this show. That was basically, I would say, life-changing for Glenn, that trip. And, you know, that is the arguably the worst place on earth. You know, I mean, it's hard to think of what could be a worse place than that. I mean, it is the most horrific things humans have ever done to other humans happened in that place. And what is it today? It's a great lesson to remember not to do it again. And, you know, a lot of these things should be kept up as the most profound and vivid way to teach these lessons of history.
You're right. You don't have to consider them glorifying these characters. It's a reminder that we never want to go down that path again. That's Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program.
We are one. The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
White trash, first class, you probably don't recycle.
Right.
You probably don't recycle.
Probably don't. White trash, first class, you probably don't recycle.
Wow.
A little chant to get the blood flowing this morning into the weekend.
So white trash,
first class,
you probably don't recycle.
You can't argue with that. You can't argue with that.
A movement's going to begin on that. The back of that catchphrase.
Oh, it's already begun, my friend.
Oh, really?
It's already begun. Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. He'll be back on Monday.
Yeah, and we were talking about slavery last break and how people are trying to remove these Confederate icons and statues. And we're trying to, you know, for I think, some motivations that are actually good, and that obviously these things are terrible. Nazis and slavery was terrible, and we all know that. It's interesting, though, the amount of freaking energy put towards taking down flags and taking down statues when, on this day, as we discuss this topic, Glenn Beck is currently in Central America working with an organization actually doing something about today's slavery problem, not 200 years ago, but today's slavery problem. Mm. And we sit here and we obsess as a nation about whether we should keep statues in parks when real people are currently dying and being raped and abused all over the world. The stat is incredible, and I didn't believe it when I first heard it. There are more slaves today than there were back in the day.
I bet. I mean, Glenn probably doesn't recycle, though.
Well, he's white. We know he's white trash.
He's first class.
And he's first class, and he probably doesn't recycle. So that does hurt his...
That taints him a lot.
It really does.
I wish it didn't, but it does.
It's so sad. It's so sad. This is all... We talked about this earlier of how the media does this all the time. They try to taint these groups. And I think this is a real problem with the alt-right stuff that they're doing now, in that applying racism to all Republicans makes, A lot of Republicans feel defensive, rightfully so, because they're not racists. Mm-hmm. And B, it takes away from actual racists. There are people out there who are racist, and just calling everybody who thinks taxes should be at 35% instead of 39% a bunch of racists puts them, it just mocks the entire issue. Mm-hmm. So one of the things they're doing now is they're calling groups like we're in Charlottesville, the alt-right, and calling them the right. Now, of course, the alt-right is a real thing. Unlike, really, to be frank, the alt-left, which is not actually a thing. The alt-right, and there's a main distinction here, the alt-right was named by the guy who is the intellectual leader of the movement. He called himself the alt-right. It's his term. It's Richard Spencer's term. The alt-left is a term that people came up with when they didn't like being called alt-right, and left is the opposite of right. Like, there's a lot less to that one, to be honest.
Well, and there's no alt-left because the left has just embraced and incorporated socialism. I think the alt-left could have been the socialist movement within the Democratic Party at one point. But now they've just embraced it, and now it's just part of them. And so there's no alternative there. It's just the left.
Yeah, and I think it's more appropriate to call out groups like Antifa, right, specifically. Yeah. Don't call it. The alt-left is like, it's just a... You know, I'm fat. You're fat. Oh, yeah. Well, you're fat. It's just a dumb response to the alt-right is an actual term. It's a term started by the intellectual leader of the movement, Richard Spencer, who was identified as the intellectual leader of the movement by Breitbart, who wrote a story about how you should understand these people, that organization at that time run by the chief strategist to the president of the United States.
And if I may, the guy's not conservative.
No, thank you.
He's not a conservative. Oh. And conservatives are being lumped in with this alt-right thing, and it's driving me out of my mind.
For example, NARAL yesterday tweeted this. Anti-choice groups and white supremacists have something important in common. They both want to control women's bodies.
Yeah, except
to which I responded, Richard Spencer is pro-choice. Okay. people retweeted that frequently to annoy NARAL, a group that's like, can barely see Planned Parenthood from where they are because they're so far to the left. They're like, they actually want, I think they want abortions to happen, you know, at like 26 years old. Like they're still pro-choice at that point. But people don't know this about Richard Spencer because people summarize the alt-right by the second word there, right. They just think, and everybody in the media will call them a right-wing group. They'll say they're far right. They are not far right. Nazis were national socialists. Richard Spencer, again, the intellectual leader of this movement, has talked about the positives of socialism if done right over and over again. This is a story that just came out in The Atlantic, which is a great story if you want to read it. It's about a guy who went to high school with Richard Spencer, who's now a journalist, and went back and talked to him again about where he is now. Richard Spencer is, if you don't know him, he's the intellectual leader of the alt-right. He's at that rally. He was the guy who, after Trump was elected, got into trouble because he was making Nazi salutes at a get-together. This is what the article says. And the concerns of conservative Christians don't interest him. He doesn't mind gay marriage, and he favors legal access to abortion, partly to reduce the number of blacks and Hispanics. So he's going back to the old school Margaret Sanger view.
Yeah, that was her thing, too. The founder of Planned Parenthood.
Right. He's more of an originalist.
On par with Richard Spencer.
Yeah, he's like an originalist of abortion. He says, quote, smart people are not using abortion as birth control. It is the unintelligent and blacks and Hispanics who use abortion as birth control. He said recently on Alt-Right's YouTube channel, this can be something that is a great boon for our people, our race. That is not a right-wing viewpoint at all. We went a little deeper on this and looked at the writings on various alt-right websites. This is a story from last year called The Pro-Life Temptation. Okay, The Pro-Life Temptation from an alt-right website. I understand the pro-life temptation. However, we on the alt-right have an appreciation of tribalism and identity. We realize that people are not just autonomous individuals. Life gains its meaning through connections to other members of our families, tribes, and nations. Being pro-life flies in the face of both of those principles. Think of what that statement is, besides the abortion point. Life gains its meaning through connections to other members of our families, tribes, and nations. That is a collectivist argument. That is not an individual argument. They're specifically getting rid of the individualist argument. You think that's right wing? That is a collectivist argument. It goes on and it gets a lot worse. A study in Europe found that over 90% of mothers who were told that their babies were going to have Down syndrome did not continue the pregnancy. We know this story because CBS recently praised it. They said it's a wow, they're about to eliminate Down syndrome through abortion and painted it with a positive stroke. So does the alt-right. They say in 2011, it was estimated that there are now 30% fewer people with the disorder in the United States due to prenatal diagnosis. In the future, as such technologies improve, again, I'm quoting, what the left calls reproductive freedom will continue to be the justification for private sector eugenics. This is the alt-right in their own words. As they go, the alt-right is skeptical, to say the least, of concepts like equality and human rights, especially as basis for policy. The unborn fetus has no connection to anyone else in the community. If it is not wanted by its own mother, criminalizing abortion means that the state must step in and say the individual has rights as an individual, despite its lack of connection to any larger social group. This is no problem to those in the conservative movement who decide right and wrong based on principles like the right to life. Again, they're mocking the most closely held viewpoints of the right. The mother-child bond, going on, and I'm quoting again from the alt-right website, Radix Journal. The mother-child bond is the strongest of human relationships. When the parent-child bond does not exist for a pregnant woman, society has no business stepping in. The alt-right, for both our own principles and the greater good, must oppose the pro-life agenda. Is that a right-wing movement?
No. No, it is not.
It is not an alternative right movement. It is not like a different strain of conservatism. It is the exact opposite. It is collectivism. It is an attack on the right to life. It is an attack on individualism. It is an attack on everything that conservatives have fought for how many years. And I don't know if that's still interesting to people on the conservative side of the argument. I venture to say this audience, it sure is.
I would think so, yeah. Oh, yeah. The whole abortion argument is it's a difficult one because, for so many years, we just decided it can't be won. Yeah, we got out of that fight. Mm. And it was such a huge mistake that that we allowed that to happen, that we just ceded that to the other side. And so you've grown that pro-abortion stance in so many different aspects of society now. And it's really only the conservative Christian right that is pro-life now. I mean, we're the only ones. It's kind of lonely out there. And it's a tough fight. And fortunately, we're back in it, though. And, You know, other than Jeffy being aborted in his 644th trimester.
Which we're fine with. That we do support.
We do support.
Just got done saying that abortion is.
It's wrong in most circumstances. In fact, all except
every,
for one.
Every case except for
you.
That one example.
Yeah. In your 644th trimester. We agree with it there. In fact, we think it should be implemented immediately.
All right. 888-727-BECK.
Really?
888-727-BECK. More of the Glenn Beck Program with Pat and Stu and Jeffy. Coming up.
Glenn Beck Program. 888-727-BECK. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com.
Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. He's back on Monday, 888-727. Beck, still dealing with the fallout from the Charlottesville rallies and the tragedy that happened there. And, you know, we're still working on getting rid of the 700 remaining Confederate statues and monuments. We're still firing people who may have been there or heard about it or seen it or...
We're still outing them, right?
I mean,
we're still outing them.
And still firing them.
Amazing.
I mean, we're in kind of a weird place here.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with this stuff because, you know, like I don't like people who are white supremacists at all. And I would not want to work with one if I knew I worked with one.
Should they never work again?
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know.
A lot of these websites are outing people they see in the rallies and then trying to find out where they work and get them fired. One instance was a guy in Berkeley, California, who worked at a hot dog place. And he has now, technically he resigned from the job, but he was forced out at the hot dog place. And like, look, if I was owning a business, I would not want a white supremacist working for me. So I'm comfortable with that decision as you make as a business owner. And it's your right as a business owner to make that decision. But as a society, do we want all, let's say, people who are white supremacists to not work so we can all pay for them on public, funds with public funds?
Yeah, but they'll be on welfare, right?
They're going to be on welfare if we don't let them work anywhere. And again, if you have a public facing job, I get it. But I mean, if you're making hot dogs behind, was he not making hot dogs as well for black people? Is there an association to his job performance that is related here? And I don't know. Maybe he wasn't. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't. But it's an odd thing for us to cheer for. I feel weird about it because I know I would want to fire the guy immediately if I owned the business.
Mm-hmm.
However, is this as a society what we want to have every person like this out of a job so we're all paying for their life instead of them? Same thing goes for this story from the Washington Post, where a bunch of charities now are canceling their plans to go to Mar-a-Lago.
What?
They're saying that they don't want to be associated with it, and a lot of them have been going there for years and have decided to pull out.
Okay, they were fine with associating with Donald Trump's property before this.
Yes. In fact, one of them was there since at least 2009, the American Cancer Society, a big charity.
So their thing is that he didn't speak out against the racism quickly enough. Is that what it is? Because he did the next day.
But then he reversed it, essentially. I think he basically blew over that second day statement.
He kind of did.
I mean,
he kind of did.
But again, let's say he's even worse than this. Let's say he's worse than Donald Trump.
Bad.
The standard is won't go to a hotel owned by a person who has views that you find distasteful to raise money for cancer research. Like, I remember this happening with Don Imus back in the day when he had his issue with MSNBC. And they fired him before his annual telethon, like the day before his annual telethon to raise money for SIDS charities to try to cure babies from dying out of unexplained circumstances.
After the guy had apologized profusely. Said he
was
wrong, admitted he was wrong, went overboard over and over and over again apologizing. And they still just fired him.
We're going to raise money for the ranch and bring people in. And Kinky Friedman's going to be there along with Bo Deedle. He'll be on the way. And Doris Goodwin.
Yeah, okay.
Doris Kearns Goodwin is always there. And I was in the morning, 4 minutes before the top of the hour.
They didn't even let him do that on the air to raise money. I mean, again, it's a weird standard. Sure. You're going to stop raising money for charity at a building because you don't like
them. Mad.
It's
really has.
A lot of tough questions.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
Matt and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck program. We're still cleaning up the madness from this whole week. The Charlottesville thing, the Confederate statues going away, all kinds of words and phrases and people speaking their mind going away, and the media contributing to it. We'll start there right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Wait, don't you feel like the media is contributing to all this? All this hysteria? All the madness? Like, in Charlottesville, last weekend, depending on your media source, you may not have even seen one of the greatest photographic representations of who we are as a people that I think I've seen in a long time. During all that violence that was breaking out on, and, you know, as the president pulled it out and got bludgeoned for, there was, in fact, violence on both sides breaking out in Charlottesville. But there was a great shot of a black police officer standing in front of, did you guys see this, and protecting the despicable neo-Nazis who were there?
Yeah.
In the rally?
Yes.
That's great. I mean, great and very common from our police.
Yep. Common. I mean, it happens all the time, mm-hmm. but it's typical. Most media outlets didn't even show that. But that, again, is who we are. And as a matter of fact, at every Black Lives Matter protest, there's some white police officers there protecting the BLM members from counter protesters. Most media outlets have never shown that. But that is also who we are. I mean, there's exceptions to every rule, but in general, white Americans and black Americans get along just fine in this country. Their neighbors, their friends, their coworkers, their bosses, interacting with employees, in many cases, their husband and wife, along with their children and a loving family. Blacks and whites do, in fact, mingle in our society, and just lately, it seems like that's not the case. But as a matter of fact, I think mostly Americans don't even make the distinction of whether you're black or a white American. To us, the vast majority of us, they're all just Americans, right? I mean, we certainly feel that way. They're all just human beings. They're fellow human beings and children of God. On 9/11, no one said, hey, how many of those 3,000 people who died were black or white? No one said that. No one asked those questions because we don't make distinctions like that. In Iraq and Afghanistan, no one ever questioned the casualty count. Well, yeah, but how many of those troops were black or white? No one. We're Americans.
But racism in and of itself is inherently a collectivist argument. I mean, you heard that from the stuff mm-hmm. we did on the alt-right last hour. You have to see people as groups and not individuals to embrace racism.
Exactly.
And that is not a conservative value. It's not a constitutional value.
And far too many people in the media have an agenda. And it's an agenda that tears the fabric of our nation apart. I was just thinking about this the other day. It's been 35 years, heard this on the radio, since Don Henley's scathing review of the news media, Dirty Laundry, that came out.
35 years?
35 years.
You remember that, Jeffy? Like your
grandchildren? I remember singing it with my grandpa, okay. You know.
And it's old, but somehow the lyrics seem more relevant maybe than they even were then. I make my living off the evening news. Just give me something I can use. People love it when you lose. They love Dirty Laundry. Although today, if Don Henley were honest and conservative, which he's not, Henley might have written, we'll show you the violent hate groups. They're all pasty white. They don't like it if you're different. They are the racist right. All they like to do is fight. They're the violent Trumpites. That's how it would go now. But they kick them when they're up, kick them when they're down. And that's what the media has been doing lately. So how about we just stop listening to them? How about we stop paying attention to them? How about we just don't let them affect us anymore? The other day, the Washington Post ran a story about your friendly neighborhood violent anarchists. The article let you know that, hey, these are just young people, you know, who have regular jobs by day. And then, yeah, they go out and break things, set stuff on fire, and crack a few capitalist skulls by night. But hey, they're just trying to make a difference. You know, they're trying to make a difference for the little people because they really care. I mean, that sort of free speech, the violence perpetrated by leftists and anarchists, that gets no condemnation from the liberal propaganda tool that is the Washington Post. In a separate story, we were informed that neo-Nazis should not be allowed to publicly even voice their opinions because hate speech is not covered by free speech.
Wait.
And nothing could be further from the truth, right? Speech that makes us uncomfortable, or the vast majority of us, vehemently disagree with and despise, that's the only kind of speech that needs protecting. That's it. I mean, of course, there are limits. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. That's the cliche example. And obviously, you can't threaten people with impunity. But even there, there's kind of a fine line to walk. But you absolutely can show your incredible ignorance. And frankly, you should, because I'm glad. I want to know who the lunatics are, and that way we can avoid them. That way we can point them out. That way we can say, we're not like that. Just like we're doing with the alt-right right now. Meanwhile, though, there's a news person in a newsroom somewhere asking, can we film the operation? Is the head dead yet? You know, the boys in the newsroom got a running bet. Get the widow on the set. We like dirty laundry. The media loves the dirty laundry. They love to show. I think they're really enjoying showing America tearing itself apart.
It does seem to be a spectator sport at this point.
Yep.
And it's covered that way. I think the application that the media makes to try to broaden these activities to the entire right or the entire left, honestly, are not healthy. Because when you try, you paint a picture of a country of people that don't want to go outside. I mean, why would you want to go outside in this environment? When in reality, mm-hmm. we all do it every day and everything's fine. But you're creating this, you're increasing the tension. You're giving so much focus to these people and it's not helpful.
Not at all. Not at all. I should probably add one addendum to that rant. And that is that Don Henley invited a lot of that media attention. He was obviously railing against the news media.
Yeah, sure.
But that happens when you're a huge star and there's a naked 16-year-old girl unconscious in your bed.
Well, I mean, it's a minor point.
You know, it's a minor
that you could bring up at this time. It's not a terrible time for the point to be brought up.
So in just full disclosure here, Don Henley did have some issues with the media. That's like that were deserved.
Yeah, you probably
were deserved.
Yeah, probably not a good outcome for you.
No, but now. In the media, we're seeing that social justice warriors are going after Elvis Presley. His 40-year anniversary of his death was...
Yeah, 40.
Was that Wednesday?
Yes, the 16th. That morning.
So, August 16th, 1977, yeah. Elvis Presley died.
Amazing.
And what are they going after it for?
You will not believe this. They are pissed off because Elvis... has a reputation of king of rock and roll, but it's been tarnished because he appropriated black music and made it digestible for white audiences. And, Stu, like an antebellum plantation owner, stood on the backs of black musicians and broke them with his heft.
Oh, my gosh. They've been after him. Him for that for a while. I mean, they've been making fun of him, and other singers, old blues singers, used to make fun of him. And I know that they made complaints about him making, who was it that used to give him a hard time about singing songs in the movies and making $25,000 and, I only made $5,000 for my songs, stuff like that. I mean, they've been after him for years on that. Maybe it's just because they liked him better. Maybe because he was Elvis Presley.
It does happen. You know, he was a pretty talented guy. So that could be a big part of it.
But also a lot of black performers were wildly popular. Yeah. And even though the nation was clearly not where it is now as far as race relations.
Yeah.
Of course, we're going back there. But they liked the black musicians, too, and they did fine. I mean, there was a lot of great black musicians that were really successful in the late 50s and early 60s. But there, yesterday I saw a breakdown of Elvis Presley doing Heartbreak Hotel. Isn't that what it's called? It's been so lonely, baby. It's been so lonely.
Is Elvis back? It sounds like it.
Yes. Don't start bad mouthing.
Don't.
Yeah.
Well, they were peeling that apart because it sounded too black, and he was appropriating the music, and it didn't sound anything like Hound Dog that he had done before. And clearly, he had stolen and appropriated the black music for his career.
The correct instinct of not wanting people to, to be racist and do these sorts of things is turned around when you go to that level. It's like to say, hey, I don't like the fact that people are racist against black people. Good instinct. Taking it to the idea that no white person can ever be good at music. Bad instinct.
Right.
Like, yeah. I mean, a lot of rappers, African-American rappers, some of the best in the world, really think Eminem is incredibly talented. Like, and think he's one of the best of the era.
Mm-hmm.
How could that be, Stu?
That, right.
He's white.
Exactly. That doesn't mean, did Eminem, steal from, he was inspired by, I'm sure, a lot of black musicians. That's not bad. That's great. That's people working together and respecting other people's art and caring. That's what we're, again, racism is a collectivist argument. And it's the same thing here. Well, you can't, I mean, black people had this and now you're taking it to white people. No, individuals exist and they do what they do. And people are actual individual humans that get to do what they want to do. That's what we're supposed to have in this society.
And nobody has ever said that by getting into country music, Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish is appropriating white culture.
Nor should they, by the way.
Nor should they.
No.
Can we stop?
Yeah, can we stop
with this madness?
Yeah.
888-727 Beck. More Pat and Stu coming up in a second.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The Glenn Beck Program.
I will be my drum. I have made my choice. We will overcome. Cause we have won.
Mercury.
If you owe back taxes to the IRS, you're not going to like hearing about their 92% conviction rate. That means the IRS wins 92% of tax avoider cases they prosecute. Maybe you skated by this long, but they are coming. You have to get out in front of your IRS problems before they show up at your home and your work, before they take your paycheck and bank accounts, and before they add you to their 92% conviction rate. Call Optima Tax Relief. They're the experts. They step between you and the IRS and start resolving the problems that keep you up at night. Just call. Ask how they've resolved over $500 million of tax debt for their clients. Ask about their A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And ask about the Fresh Start program with a chance to settle your back taxes for pennies on the dollar. These guys know what they're doing. You've seen the success stories. Give them a call. 800-706-3011. 800-706-3011. 800-706-3011. Optima Tax Relief.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
It's Friday. Pat and Stu for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. 888-727 Beck.
You mentioned during your last rant about the media, and they have been horrible in many, many ways. I think it's also important to point out when they get things right, and a lot of times
it's so rare.
We've been saying this, it is rare.
You can count them on one hand, probably.
Usually. One guy we've talked about for a long time, going back to the Obama administration, is Jake Tapper. Tapper was the one guy asking tough questions of Barack Obama and various Jay Carney-esque individuals who were representatives of Obama. And Tapper took him to task often and really pushed back as a mainstream media voice there. And it was at a time that nobody was doing it. Since then, Donald Trump has become president, and seemingly everyone on the right has forgotten about that. Like, they've forgotten that Tapper was like that, and he gets beat up a lot by the right. Let me give you a couple examples from just this week. He did an interview with Rolling Stone in which he said, a lot of people who like me talking about Trump didn't like when I was talking about Obama. The Obama administration saw him as a nuisance and a grandstander, to use a common term these days, a guy who was in their face and was a pain in their butt. And he criticized them and said that Obama got the benefit of the doubt on a lot of things because the media liked him better. They liked Obama, they agreed with Obama, and they gave him an easy road.
Exactly
Jake Tapper
right.
saying that.
That's exactly right.
Here's another example. We have, how many times, and you did it there, and we've seen it a million times, we've done it as well. Wait a minute. Yes, the people, the white supremacists were terrible. But what's frustrating to people on the right is not that the violence was equivalent with Antifa in the Charlottesville case. It wasn't. I mean, somebody died on the other side. However, there was violence there from that side, and it should be noted. Even
they,
if you
they
say
brought
it's
clubs, they brought boards, sure. 2x4s. They brought. There was some. There, you know, there was some weaponry on their side as well.
There's a big story in the New York Times today talking about how this group is there for violence. In their words, they are there to stop the hate with violence. That is what they are identifying, Antifa is saying. So again, New York Times deserves credit for bringing that out. Jake Tapper is another voice who has called attention to what happened in Charlottesville from Antifa. This is his tweet storm from, I think it was yesterday. At least two journalists in Charlottesville were assaulted by people protesting the Klan Nazi alt-right rally. The alleged assailant of the journalist was charged. A photojournalist with the Richmond CBS station also was assaulted by filming a counter protest. He needed medical attention, and he posted the picture of the gash in this guy's head from being assaulted. A source at the station.
So somebody hit him with something?
Yeah, I can't remember. I saw the gash, but I think he was hit over the head. I don't know what it was, though, he was hit with.
Wow.
But yes, he was definitely hit. A source at the station said he's been out for 3 days with a concussion. Antifa posted this on Facebook about the assault, which is a source at the station is full of out-and-out lies. These are unprovoked assaults on journalists doing their jobs by those marching against the hateful racists. Disgusting. That's from Jake Tapper. That's not a half measure. That's not him saying it's a kind of okay because fascists are bad. He is calling it disgusting, and he deserves credit. And there are a few people around in the media that are actually doing that. So it's kind of nice to see. And, you know, you talk about the Antifa approach to stop racism. Is that effective? I mean, I think the answer to that is no. It creates more anger, more hostility. It inflames it. It puts people back in their camps even further. What about this approach instead? Daryl Davis, he's a musician. This comes from Faithwire. He's done a lot over the last several decades on this exact issue. Davis documented his story in a book and documentary as well. It started when he was a black member of a country music band that began playing mostly white venues. Davis began having conversations with some of the white patrons. One of the first men he spoke with told him he'd never had a drink with a black man before. When Davis inquired why that was, the man admitted he was a member of the KKK, which you're not going to be drinking with black guys that often, probably.
You might have just put a crimp in your friendship. It's possible.
But how can you react to that? You could throw the beer bottle at his head.
Yeah.
Right? Easily.
Yes.
You can justifiably use four-letter words and out him and get him fired from his hot dog job or wherever he was working. Davis said he had spent time with legends like Chuck Berry, Dolly Parton, Joe Frazier, and more, but it's his time with KKK members that has made the most impact on his world. He even has a photo of himself with a hooded Klansman on his wall right next to those music legends. After the first encounter with a Klan member, Davis began having regular conversations with them. He took a curious approach, asking a lot of questions, but never asked for his opinion. They never asked for his opinion back on anything. But it was his friendly, non-angry approach that gave him an opening to actually befriend the men who appeared at first glance to hate him because of his skin color. After spending some time with him, things began to change. Eventually, the KKK members did start to ask his opinion about things, and that's when the light bulbs began to appear in their minds. Over the years, Davis's friendships has convinced 25 men to leave the KKK.
Wow.
Many of them gave their robes and hoods when they left. He keeps them as souvenirs, wreckers of the battles he won, though his intentions was never to convert them in the first place. It was just a human connection that showed them the light. How great is that story?
Tremendous.
You can get it. I'll post it on Facebook and get it at faithwire.com as well. I mean, that is an incredible
tremendous story.
Awesome. And I mean, look,
it can be done.
It's much harder to do that.
Yeah.
It's easy to throw bottles at people on both sides. But doing something like that is the way you actually win.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
Pat and Stu and Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. He's back on Monday. I can't tell you how happy I am that football season is here.
Yes.
Like
it's a balming salve on all of my wounds right now. It's the only thing that's keeping us alive.
I feel like this.
I truly believe. It's the only thing keeping us alive.
Yeah. And every freaking year these days, I feel the same way. It's not just I love sports or I love football or I want to see football.
Right.
It's like an antidote to some disease I have. Like
that's one of the reasons I'm always a fan of balmy salve.
Yeah.
Always.
Who
a
isn't?
Fan.
Who isn't?
It is.
8 days away from the first BYU game.
Of course, thing everyone was counting down to.
I don't appreciate you looking at me when you said that like I didn't know it.
Okay? I didn't mean to talk down to you. Okay. Sorry, Jeffy.
That's a matchup against Portland State, I believe.
Yeah. The Vikings. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Vikings come to town. Yeah.
Is this their first year in the playing football? Or
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
It is
I just
not.
Thought they were just
no,
getting
it is not.
Together.
They're actually a pretty good FCS team. And then the following week, of course, it begins for real with LSU.
You keep
LSU.
Telling yourself that.
LSU.
They're actually pretty good. Okay.
I mean, I was actually thinking more of, you know, the National Football League, which is preseason
I'm thinking of that
is
as
underway.
Yeah. Yes, but it's only preseason and, you know, but did the Eagles played last night?
Yeah,
right?
Eagles played last night.
They win?
They did win.
They won.
Oh, nice. Which means absolutely nothing. Who cares if you win or lose preseason games? There was a moment, though, that was pretty interesting. Because, you know, football games now, they have so many other things going on.
Always.
You know, your sponsors are a big one. Like, you're in the middle of trying to tell a sponsor while football is going on. Or you bring on a guest and they're telling a long story and there's action going on.
Still
it's hard to react.
Game going on, I
right.
know.
There was a moment last night where they were trying to have this moment of somber reflection during the game.
Because somebody had died.
Somebody had passed away, and I can't remember. I missed who it was.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the story about the person passing away, an exciting play happened, an interception that was returned about 50 yards. So listen to the announcer try to tell you this tragic story, and you can hear exactly when something exciting happens in the middle of it.
His place in the exclusive club in 1995. We are all deeply saddened by his recent passing. And send thoughts and prayers to his family. We'll miss you, Jimmy Gow.
And we're all deeply saddened by his passing. Oh, touchdown! Touchdown!
It's time. Listen to that one more time. Can we do it one more time?
Yeah.
His place in the exclusive club in 1995. We are all deeply saddened by his recent passing and extend our thoughts and prayers to his family. We'll miss you, Jimmy Gow.
We'll miss you, Jimmy Gow.
And it's like back flags in the play, and here is Darby, the new addition.
That is amazing.
It's so great.
That's amazing.
Because not only right when he says passing, the entire crowd goes nuts. Like, we're really saddened by his passing. It's unbelievable. Like, and we're all saddened by the soul-crushing death from a combination of syphilis and rampant chlamydia. Oh, what a play. And then 26 people fell off a roller coaster and then were eaten by crocodiles. Amazing. What an incredible. Oh, and that's when his mother walked into a propeller of a Cessna. And look at that. And that's when the pieces were consumed by passing vagrants. Amazing. Down to the 17-yard line.
Maybe not the best time to tell the heartbreaking story, you know?
It's hard.
Maybe wait.
Well, you don't know it's coming, right?
Well, I know, but I don't know, during a commercial break or when you've just come back and they're not on the field yet,
yeah.
They haven't, you know, there's a time to do that.
He's trying his right? best to rush it in there. No pass, I got, we feel really bad for, that's incredible, we feel bad for the whole family, and they're all suffering really badly, and then I'm back to you. It was tough.
And then he got the black plague! It was so sad! Look at him go!
And the family is currently surviving all the series of amputations! What an amazing play! There's just nothing you can do in the moment.
No, you can't.
It really is tough. It's interesting.
Great.
The Eagles have an interesting storyline this year, and I know no one cares about the Eagles outside of me, But they do care about the Colin Kaepernick situation.
Yes, they do.
And so Kaepernick, it's such a fascinating
thing. That's driving me out of my mind.
Yeah.
I can't take the commentators on ESPN lamenting the Colin Kaepernick thing as if there is no doubt he would be playing if he weren't black and had an afro. I mean, come on.
It's so ridiculous. Or his tattoos. They always talk about his tattoos as if there's some controversial thing. People just do not, white people do not understand tattoos. Like, that's not a
almost
unique...
every NFL player in the league is tattooed now.
Yeah.
And so it's not the tattoos.
So Kaepernick, who's just, look, objectively bad at his job. He's not a good quarterback, period. Okay?
It's true.
He lost his job to Blaine Gabbert. Okay?
He did that
before he started with any of his controversies, as far as the national anthem goes. He lost his job to Blaine Gabbert. Okay, did he have early in his career on a very good defensive team with a very strong running game? He was an adequate quarterback that got them into the playoffs. However, so was Mark Sanchez. Right? Yeah. Mark Sanchez was the exact same guy, got them very deep into the playoffs, was not a great quarterback, but had a good defense and a good running game. And you can do that, right? That's something that happens in the NFL. So, but people look back at Kaepernick and say, oh, well, he should definitely be on the field. Here's a specific example. Malcolm Jenkins is the safety for the Eagles. All-star, all-pro, great player. If he was released by the Eagles tomorrow, every team in the league would try to pick him up. He has spent the last 2 years, like Kaepernick, not honoring the national anthem. He's been putting his fist up in the air in a, and I would say, arguably more offensive way than Kaepernick. Now, Malcolm Jenkins is a much better player than Kaepernick. And everybody would pick him up if he was released. And he's honored by the Eagles. He's on the team. But another layer of this is Jenkins said, well, the problem with the Kaepernick is a lot of these teams around the league are just, they're cowards. They're cowards. Well, let's look at your team for a second, Malcolm. Your team, the Philadelphia Eagles, obviously aren't cowards because they keep you on the team. They want you on the team, and you're doing the thing with the national anthem, the same thing Kaepernick had. Now, the Philadelphia Eagles started this season in need of a backup quarterback. They got rid of Chase Daniel, and they needed someone. Who did they sign? Nick Foles. Now, this is a team that...
I thought you were going to say Blaine Gabbert.
No, not Blaine Gabbert. No, that would have been really
amazing. Don't use that example.
No, Nick Foles, right? Nick Foles, a guy who has lost his job twice in the past 3 years. As starting quarterback, and is a guy who's not a superstar. He had just like Kaepernick, a one really good year, and then outside of that has been a disappointment, as he'd probably even tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Kaepernick. Kaepernick had a good year and a half, not nearly as good as Foles, but had a good year and a half, got them deep into the playoffs, and was available on the market. The Eagles, who have shown they have a liberal owner, and have shown they will sign someone and cherish them, even when they don't stand up for the national anthem, they didn't look at Kaepernick. Why? Because Kaepernick sucks. He's a crap heap of a quarterback. It's got nothing to do with his viewpoints.
I mean, could there be an element, in addition to sucking?
Well, sure.
That they don't want the baggage he brings with him.
The divisiveness that he's going to bring into the locker room? Nobody wants that at all.
No, well, no. And I want to, even it's not even divisiveness. Like, for example, Chris Long, one of the Eagles players, who said he would never sit for the national anthem, put his arm around Malcolm Jenkins yesterday during the national anthem, kind of show like, hey, I don't agree with you, but I support you, right? So, you know, that is fine, and all of that's good. I think there's an element of, same thing with Tim Tebow, by the way, an element of you don't want your third string quarterback being the story.
Right.
You don't want them to be not divisiveness, distraction. You don't want to have to answer questions about the last guy on your roster every time you have a press conference.
Right.
So I think...
And so between the two things, it's mostly weighted on the side of being bad.
Yeah. I mean, clearly the NFL, they want... If you can play the sport, play the game, and play it well, the NFL puts up with an awful lot.
Murder!
Exactly. Murder. Yeah.
Murder!
I mean, Ray Lewis was charged with
if you accidentally pick up a girl's blouse, they let you go for six games, but...
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, look, it's, the consistency element isn't necessarily
the blouse thing that got Ezekiel Elliott suspended.
Probably the pictures of the bruising was a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
But still, that's questionable as well, I grant you. But this is the thing. The guy who's complaining about the NFL owners being cowards is the perfect example as to why it's not true. He's a good player, and he can't shake his job by standing up with a fist salute to the sky during the national anthem because he's good. Kaepernick isn't good. He's not good at the job he's chosen, which is why he won't be in the league. At least 90% of it.
And because every ESPN commentator thought he would be picked up by some team, and he hasn't been yet, because everybody had a chance. The Eagles had a chance. Chicago had a chance.
Seattle.
Miami, Seattle. I mean, and everybody passed on him. Is everybody racist in the NFL?
Yeah, everybody. Even the teams that have other players who are doing the same thing, those teams are racist.
And I mean, it's so absurd. Because... you know, what is it, 80% black in the NFL? I don't think you could even make that case that they're racist.
No, it's absolutely ridiculous. Well, I think the case you could make more than anything else with Colin Kaepernick is because, you know, could you add Colin Kaepernick to a roster as a third string quarterback and see if he works out? Sure. Absolutely. Why not take a whirl? He's had at least some modicum of success in the league. Totally understandable. But this is a guy who continually tells you over and over and over again, you know what? NFL, not my top priority. It's about sixth on my list. Let me tweet about everything else in my life going on and not focus on this. And you know what? That is a huge line. It shows that it's not the point of dedication where, you know what? Thousands of guys who want that job, it is the number one thing in their life. Right or wrong, it is. And his job is to go out there and perform, not teach us about what bad people we are. We get that from all over the place. The media is going to tell us that every single day. You don't need to come and tell us how awful of a society we are as your number one priority. You want to do that, become an activist, start an organization, and stop throwing interceptions in our league. You can do that on your own time.
What a concept. 888-727-BECK. More of the Glenn Beck Program with Pat, Stu, and Jeffy coming up.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. All right, just to finish off the week on a couple of fun notes. The other thing that we've had in the show prep all week long and haven't really talked about is this Netflix situation where they're poaching some of the big talent from the networks because, I mean, they are serious about original programming.
Yeah.
They spent $5 billion last year, I believe.
Just the $5
billion? Just $5 billion on brand new programming. And then they poached Shonda Rhimes, creator of Grey's Anatomy and Scandal from ABC, to create...
Amazon is doing the same thing.
It's
becoming a big fight between Amazon and Netflix as far as creating new content, and they're taking whoever is good and throwing money at them.
Media is changing. And Netflix now, worldwide, has more than 100 million subscribers.
That's a good business.
100 million subscribers.
It's incredible, too. And did you see... this is actually the biggest story of the week. How do we not talk about this? Number one story to me, of course, is actually... the idea that Coke Zero is going off the market and they're replacing it with something. And I'm furious about it.
And are we certain that Coke Zero goes away to make room for this new thing?
That's what they keep saying. Even Coke Zero's Twitter account is saying it.
Oh, you'll love the new Coke Zero sugar.
Which is weird because Zero implies there was zero sugar before, which it had no sugar before.
And according to reports, they're already putting it on the shelf in the same place where Coke Zero was. So they're not making new space for it.
I'm very upset. I mean, I have Diet Coke with Splenda. Nobody buys that. Take something that nobody buys off the market. People actually drink Coke Zero. I buy Tab. I don't think it's Tab. Tab so still exists. Is that Coca-Cola? I think it's Coca-Cola.
So, yeah.
It's like, you want to get rid of a product. I mean, I like Tab.
Fresca. Know? Fresca?
I do like Fresca. I think it's delicious. It's quite refreshing.
I think, are a secret woman, just like Glenn Beck.
You know what?
You're a secret woman.
You know what? Stop it with your gender normative standards. We could all be, you know what? Maybe sometimes when I'm drinking, I identify a different way.
Yes, you do.
But the second biggest story of the week, past the Coke Zero thing, is this movie pass situation. Have you followed this at all?
Yes, no. I have.
So listen, this is it's one of the co-founders of Netflix, started a company called Movie Pass, apparently a few years ago. How I didn't know about this until now, I don't know. But it was a membership where for $50 a month, you could go see as many movies as you wanted in the theater. Now,
what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're saying that's a good deal, right?
Yeah.
Because I would go all the time. Now, I can understand some people cannot get to movies enough to justify $50 a month. I get that.
Still, though.
So, but still an interesting offer, right? Yes. You'd consider that because I love movies. They just lowered the price to $10 a month.
$10 a month.
Unlimited movies in any theater.
How can they do that? How did they get... They had every theater chain?
Yeah. Yeah, everything.
Agreed
so
this?
What they do is you get a card which works as a prepaid debit card, and you have to sign on the thing. You get it credits your account, and then you go and play for it at the theater. Now there's some restrictions. Sweet. The only restrictions are you only see one movie a day, and you can't see the same movie twice at any point. So you can't keep going back to see the same movie over and over.
I'll buy you a pass when I hit that $510 million this weekend.
Thank you,
oh
yeah, Jeffy.
I'll buy you a pass.
So are you gonna come in next week, Jeffy, after you win?
After I win, no.
Will we ever see you again if you won the lottery?
No.
Pray that he wins the lottery.
Please,
pray.
Please. We're hoping more than even him.
Please.
That he wins the lottery.
Please win the lottery. All right, Glenn's back on Monday. We'll talk to you then.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.